welcome to Picks with the Professor, the show where a real statistics professor gives you sports betting tips. Jake, this is Friday's Sweet 16 games. Again, we're recording this immediately after Thursday games. So if you are with us in Nub Club, you are seeing this either late Monday night or Tuesday. Plenty of time here to be thinking about these games. Of course, there's NIT, CBI, and one last CIT game that we're continuing to update picks for people over on Dub Club. But Jake, we're releasing this show here on Tuesday night on YouTube because Wednesday night will be our first MLB show of the season. So we are shifting gears into baseball season here shortly. This will either be our last or second to last college basketball show. We'll see how the content goes, but we're getting to the point where we won't have enough games to do a show on college basketball, because after these games, there are only seven left split across 3 days. So, you know, don't be sad because it's over. Be happy because it happened, I guess, is the way to look at it here. But a great set of games here for Friday. We already discussed why we loved all the Thursday games in this slate. You know, I think it's going to deliver just as much as a Thursday slate. A couple of potential blowouts on the Thursday one, probably fewer on this one. So it just should be some really competitive games. But again, check out our Dub Club if you haven't yet. 10-day free trial to start you out. We're confident that you will like what you get there. You get picks when you can't watch the show, the convenience of that delivered right to you with a notification right into the Discord chat or a text or an email, whatever you want. More picks, more information, all sorts of goodies, and of course a Discord chat that has a lot of great people and a lot of fun, a lot of people helping people out, giving people ideas, sounding board. That QR code or link in the show description will get you your 10-day free trial. But Jake, we'll start off here picking up right where we left off, continuing into Friday. The only sad thing here is that if we have a great Thursday night of games, we have to wait almost 24 hours to Friday. They don't start right back up here at noon the next day, unfortunately. But NC State and Marquette should be really fun with this Marquette team. You know, I've said all along, very strong team. We liked them even when Kolek was out, thought they were being disrespected just because they have so much depth. You know, my father as a Texas alum is well acquainted with Shaka Smart. And we had a lot of talk this weekend, him and I were chatting about it, that it's so interesting that he had a style at VCU, went to Texas, and I don't know, I'm not in the guy's brain, I haven't talked to him, but seemingly started trying to recruit higher end players than he was ever able to get and couldn't quite make his system work. Maybe learned a little bit from that lesson as he went to Marquette and has kind of more of a hybrid now. He's still got better players now than he had at VCU because Marquette's obviously a more reputable program, more history, you know, et cetera, a bigger conference, all those things. But he's able to kind of do a little bit more like he did back in his VCU days with the depth, with the tempo and the pressure and the turnovers and things that he maybe wasn't quite able to do very well at Texas, and really, you know, kind of making everyone forget that stint and remember that he is a good college basketball coach, especially as long as he sticks to, you know, making sure his program is his. And this Marquette team reeks of Shaka Smart in a very good way. They're in the Sweet 16 against an NC State team that nobody thought would be here a mere 2 weeks ago. The run they went on in the ACC tournament was incredible, but coming into this weekend, we had them as an A-grade pick over Tech, said they're getting really disrespected themselves. Thought they could make a run, had them as one of our strongest picks over Oakland, and they won or pushed, depending on maybe the number that you got there, in a game that they seemingly controlled the whole time. Oakland was very pesky. Credit to them, and now we'll get to see NC State as the lone double-digit seed, if I'm not mistaken here, taking on Marquette. Not going to touch the sign. Going to go over 150.5 as the model projects 155. Jake, why do we like this over?
One, I mean, both teams play at a quicker pace, which is kind of surprising when you look at a team with NC State with a guy like DJ Burns being one of their better players. You wouldn't think quick pace would be what they wanted. But instead, they play pretty quick. Actually, right about the same kind of pace that Marquette plays. I mean, you can see it on the screen. It's about 40 spots different, but only, what, 4 points different there. It's relatively similar. You've got guys on either side who can go nuts. Like, look, Tyler Kulik, Cam Jones are an incredible offensive pair. Kulik makes everything happen, and when he does that crazy layup thing where he makes his arm 10 foot longer than what it actually is and sends it off the glass like he's Kyrie Irving or something, that it's really hard to stop. I don't see NC State's not the greatest defensive team in the world. They're really going to struggle to stay in front of him. But Marquette is also going to struggle with the size of NC State, like with Burns and Diarra and Middlebrooks, I think it's the big white guy. Those guys are very good big men. I mean, NC State with DJ Burns can really put on a clinic. He showed against anybody and everybody he's gone against. He's got really quick feet, just not the fastest up and down the court. But the other two big guys can move all over. They can play defense. They rebound well. They're going to be able to take advantage of Marquette on the offensive glass because Marquette has struggled to rebound this year. Part of that is because their size isn't like big boy size. It's more of like long, leaner athlete type size. And I think that's always kind of been a little bit of a Shaka Smart problem with rebounding. Part of it's by design. They don't really hit the offensive glass that much. But this year they're even struggling to keep teams off the offensive glass. And that's going to hurt with NC State. That's really going to help our over. NC State has got, I mean, DJ Horn, when he goes off, he can really turn it on. I think this game will be fun to watch. It's going to be up and down, a lot of pace to it. I kind of lean NC State on the side. I think with the big guys, they're going to be able to control periods of the game. And just kind of like you saw with Oakland, not that the Marquette's is like Oakland and Marquette are the same caliber of team, but I think it's going to be a similar thing where Marquette's going to maybe take a leader here or there and then fall back. But NC State's just going to keep chugging along like the tortoise and the hare and just control the game and win. But either way, it's going to have a faster pace. It's going to be look similar to that. Well, we got 152 in the Oakland game in overtime. I think we're going to get a bit faster than see that kind of score in regulation.
If you're with us over at Dub Club, you already know if the model agrees or disagrees with you on that one, Jake. So maybe you're going against the model, maybe you're not. Well, if you're with us on Dub Club, you already know the answer to that. When you look back at NC State, they've played an astonishing 7 postseason games at this point because of that crazy run in the ACC tournament. 4-3 to the over. The unders all missed by like 3 points. And now a couple of the overs got there from overtime, so there's something to consider there. But when you look back at the end of the regular season, they finished the regular season by going over in 6 of their last 8 games. They were over more times than they were under. Marquette's a team that we've talked about a handful of times this year with regards to totals, feeling very confident in what we pick with them because they're fairly easy to project. If you think the other team's going to play faster, speed it up, and want to score points, Marquette will kind of do that. And if the other team slows it down, then that's kind of the game Marquette's going to play, namely because Marquette gets their pace, not from, a 7 seconds or less type offense, but from that pressure on those turnovers. And if you're not turning the ball over, you're not being pressured. If you aren't, when they turn it over, running real fast, whatever, it can really change the pace of the game. But NC State, better on offense than defense. And as we've seen here, like you said, a team that can kind of get up and down the court a little bit with the big guy, which is surprising. The fact that they have an above average pace with a guy like DJ Burns is just a testament to how willing they are to try to get in these higher scoring games.
Leave him behind.
Hey, but that kind of makes sense, actually, too, right? If they could get something quick and prevent him from running up and down the court an extra couple times, keep him out there. Talked about offensive rebounds. I think that's the other key to this game with regards to the total. Offensive rebounds are your friend for overs because obviously you're going to get a lot of first shot makes. But when you get those misses, you get an offensive rebound, especially with a guy like DJ Burns down there who can put it back really quick. That's going to be the type of thing that's going to help get us a bunch of quick points. And that's exactly what we need here, as opposed to the other team having the ball you know, however many feet away from the basket in the new 30 seconds, just putting it right back up quick. So his offensive rebounds could help get us a few extra cheap points. Model says on average 155. So we're thinking somewhere in the 150s is where this game is most likely to land. Could be in the 160s, could be in the 140s. That makes for a lot of winners. So over 150.5 in that one. The other early game, Gonzaga and Purdue. Jake, we aren't touching the sign on this one. The model does have a B grade on the side, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I think the side is so fascinating here because Gonzaga is a team that struggled early in the season in ways that I'm not sure we've seen Gonzaga struggle. If we have, I've missed it. Maybe 1 year, but I mean, they struggled in ways they haven't struggled in like 15 years. Early in the season, and you know, if they had not turned things around, people were talking about, you know, would they even make the tournament in such a weak conference where it was just them and St. Mary's? And then they flipped the switch and they've started playing really well. Then you have Purdue on the other side, who is one of the top teams in college basketball. We've known that. We've also seen them sometimes struggle come March. We saw them struggle in the conference tournament, not being able to finish that out there. Looked pretty good against Utah State. Gonzaga is a little bit of a different story than Utah State. This is going to be a fascinating matchup here. Purdue, you know, really trying to avenge what happened last season. You know, a matchup like Gonzaga can provide a test that I would not have projected to be a test 2 months ago. But with the way Gonzaga is playing lately, this isn't a gimme for Purdue. But we're going to pick instead as the official pick the one we like the most in this game, which is the over 154.5, models 159. Jake, the Purdue overs have been more good than bad to us. We got an easy over winner on, I believe it was Sunday, against Utah State because Purdue was able to put up 100. I'm not sure they put up 100 on Gonzaga, but you can see on screen there that Gonzaga, their offense has finally found it. And I remember we talked about 2 months ago, right kind of before Gonzaga flipped things around, maybe in the middle of their down, and we kind of were talking about, based off of what they had done, and the model was projecting their defense to be better than their offense, and we were talking about how weird that was. That's not what we expect. As they've gotten it figured out, things have aligned for them, and that was really the biggest problem, is their offense was so shaky. Their offense coming around now, becoming the dominant force it is, both offenses will have an advantage in this one. We're expecting a slightly above average pace. Teams have tried to speed Purdue up all season, and for the most part, Purdue has acquiesced those requests. And so Gonzaga being kind of back to the old Gonzaga, high scoring, lots of points, lots of offense, we think this can get up closer to 160, over 154.5, the official pick. B-minus grade. Jake, tell us more.
Yeah, like, this will be an absolutely fantastic game. It's really going to be a chess match, and both neither team is the defensive stalwart that where it's going to be that kind of chess match. It's going to be, as Mark Few with looking at how Greg played last game. This is what one of the lineups I would throw out there quite a bit is he going to be bold enough to sit EK and throw Greg out there and open up that middle and make Edie guard out beyond the arc? Because if he does that, that's really going to open things up, because neither team really turns the ball over. Neither team forces turnovers. Both teams are very good shooting the ball. Both teams are very good on offense, finding open shots. They really run and play run when they need to. And then Edie is in both sets of big guys. Edie and EK and everybody are really good at finding open teammates when they get the double, because they are good enough to be doubled. It's going to be fun to watch because there's shooters all over the place. There's so much talent here. Purdue is absolutely on fire shooting threes right now. Just Utah State never stood a chance. Grambling State seemed to put up more of a fight than Utah State did, which I'm sure that made all the Purdue fans nervous a little bit there for a bit. But, I mean, this Gonzaga team, in my opinion, didn't really deserve the seed they got. Their resume wasn't there. The talent was always there. Yeah. And then you see they absolutely dismantle McNeese, who everybody was talking about might be the one that like a double-digit seed to make a run and all this. Never in doubt. And then Kansas played good for a half, and then Gonzaga came out and just throttled them. I think you're going to see a very, very good offensive team. It's really going to test Purdue's defense, and same way back and forth, because Edie is a conundrum. The refs are always going to be a little bit much on with Edie, and he shoots great free throw. He's a great free throw shooter for a big guy, especially one at 7'5". It's going to be very – there's going to be points from every which way. I can't wait to just double down on this over.
The way that Gonzaga put up all those points on – both McNeese and Kansas was so impressive. It was a great weekend for them, playing their best basketball at the right time. But the one I wanted to highlight really is just the Kansas one. I made the comment to our people on Dub Club that or Discord, I can't remember which one. I guess it's all the same, right? That the model wasn't really loving Gonzaga, but I thought Gonzaga gets Kansas made a lot of sense. It gets his depth problems. With McCullough out, you know, really mattered, and they really needed him healthy to make a run. What I didn't expect was Gonzaga to score that many points, because Kansas really found a defensive identity as the season wore on. Part of that was probably because the injuries, part of it might have been just every once in a while, that's what the Bill Self team will do. They'll just kind of, you know, he's obviously a great coach and can sometimes have good offensive teams, sometimes good defensive teams or whatever, but Kansas was playing some slower basketball, some good defense, you know, the last month, month and a half of the season, and Gonzaga just lit them up. And when you see that sort of performance, you see them going up against Purdue and say, there should be some points in this game. And anything can happen in one night, one game, you never know, right? That's why I always preach responsible betting. Never put too much on one game, because anything can happen. But on average, there should be a lot of points in this one. So we're going to go over 154 and a half with the B minus grade pick. But as always, we encourage you to shop around, whether you're betting totals or sides. We're going to cover a couple of sides here momentarily. Every extra half point or point that you can get can make the difference. If you haven't yet signed up with BetUS, that link in the show description, you can get 125% bonus on your first ever three deposits with them.
BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook and casino. Live betting and racebook. We're celebrating 30 years with a historic offer. A 125% sign-up bonus on your first three deposits. Plus 10% gambler's insurance. Get started today. BetUS, where the game begins.
To the late slate of games, Jake, Duke and Houston, I feel like it could be an epic battle here. Duke is a team that can lose to anybody. It seems like they've had some moments this year where they just haven't shown up. And so there's a possibility, obviously, that Houston wins this game by, you know, a runaway margin. We've seen Houston be able to do that, but we've also seen Houston sometimes struggle with better teams. And Duke's one of those teams whose ceiling is pretty high. Sideline's got them as the fifth best team, Houston at number two. Although Houston and Purdue have been kind of ping-ponging that 2 and 3 slot here for the last month. Incredible matchup here between number 2 and number 5 in the country, according to Sideline, not based off a resume, but based off how good they are today. And if you were to take their top-tier games, this game could be a classic. And the fun part is, even if they both play mediocre, it could be a classic. The only issue is going to be, of course, if one team shows up and one team doesn't. And that's the thing, is there's a lot of variance in this game. All that to say, I think that's why we like Duke plus four. There's a lot of variance in this game. A lot of things can happen. Houston, as we saw against Texas A&M, a terrible free throw shooting team. Cousin Jared and I talked about that a month or so ago, and it reared its ugly head there. So there's a lot of ways for Duke to kind of get back into this ball game. If Houston were to have a lead late, Duke could win this game. Duke plus four, only a C grade according to the model, because the model has Houston by two. But when you consider the variance in this and all the things that can happen, this seems like a dog or pass type situation. Jake, you can play the money line or you can take the 4 points. We're going to take the 4 points. Tell us why.
Yeah, I mean, look, one, Houston is a very slow team. Duke is also on the slower end. So that's going to keep this game tighter just because that's just how things are, the workout with pace. The lack of free throw shooting from Houston is going to be big. Duke is not that great from the free throw line, but they do get there a little more often. Houston likes to put them there, so that's kind of an advantage for Duke, where that's going to happen. The turnovers, I don't think Houston's going to be able to force the turnovers they need to get their offense to score, because their offense can go through stealth periods. You saw it against Texas A&M. Didn't really get to see it against Longwood, but if you go back to the Iowa State game before that, their offense never showed up. Even against TCU in the first game of the Big 12 tournament, 60-45, a 15-point win, but it's not like their offense really carried it. They just held TCU so far down. Because that defense is fantastic, and you should rely on it. And Jamal Shedd and LJ Cryer and Emmanuel Sharp are very, very good guards. They can also take some dumb shots. They tend to miss some of those. They get in foul trouble all out against Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. The Miracle is able to hold on to that. Duke, on the other hand, they're a little bit thinner, but Proctor and McCain and Roach are three point guards out there that they can handle the pressure. Mitchell makes matchup problems all over the place because he's so good on defense and such an athletic guy. And if he's hitting a jump shot at all, makes it really hard. And then Kyle Filipowski can affect games without really scoring. And Duke probably played their three best halves of basketball back-to-back-to-back here, with the second half against Vermont and the way they handled James Madison. Filipowski scored 3 points, took two shots, I think was the total shots he took against Vermont. So he doesn't need to be scoring to be that effective. He rebounds the ball, blocks shots, does everything well. Houston's going to struggle with that because he can step out. That's really going to pull their bigger guys out, like Francis and stuff, who tends to get in foul trouble. I think it's really going to come back to that foul trouble-ish thing for Houston. They are one of the teams that foul the most. They get real aggressive. They go for these steals. They, on the way they rebound with such aggressiveness on offense and defensive end that it causes a lot of problems, and especially in these tournament games where teams aren't used to, or refs aren't used to, like how they play throughout the Big 12 and stuff, you're going to get a little bit more of that called. And I think that really goes Duke's way here, especially with the free throw line. If McCain is shooting anything like he did last game, or Proctor or Roach, Duke has a decent chance to win this outright. But I think +4 is a really good play.
Watching Houston, Texas A&M, was, you know, we had Houston in that one, and I mean, obviously it was a frustrating loss considering they were up 10, you know, outside the number late in the game, and it wasn't like, you know, we were counting for money or anything, but we were like, hey, we got a great shot to win this, and then just kind of collapsing at the end. And there were two main reasons that they collapsed, and we've talked about one of them is the free throw shooting, of course, but the other one, as you talked about, was the fouls. When they had their offense against A&M was two players. Those two players scored like 60% of their points, or I don't know the exact number, but it was a lot. Those two guys. And then they both fouled out, and you know, their offense really struggled. I mean, they escaped with the victory in that one, in a game that should have never gone to overtime, because that shot was, I mean, maybe the most incredible play of the tournament. Obviously an honorable mention to the Samford block against Kansas. That was called a foul, which is just a tragedy in and of itself. And I'm sure there were a couple other, you know, great ones. And there was the like 3-quarter court shot in the half. But I mean, that shot in that moment to tie the game with the 1 second left man in was the most incredible shots of the tournament. And for them, it was
the way the pass made it out there to him as well. Yes. Like two bounces and nobody was near it.
And so obviously she never got to overtime because that was insane. But then Houston just, like I said, it just feels like they lucked into that win. And that's not to say they can't win the tournament, because a number of times we've seen a team go on the run, and UConn last year wasn't one of them, but we've seen teams have a rough game, struggle, eke by, and win the tournament. That's fine. It's just to say that they got themselves into that situation because the free throw shooting and because their offense can get stagnant and really rely on one player. And if you happen to coincide offense relying on one or two players and those one or two players in foul trouble, that can spell disaster. And that's how a 10-point lead turns into an overtime game in a couple of minutes versus maybe they play Duke here. Maybe their offense kind of falls onto a player or two and the guys in foul trouble are different players and maybe it's totally fine. But that's a real risk with Houston, and you add that with the risk of the free throw, and that's to the point where we're saying that Duke plus four makes a lot of sense, that on average, there's a lot of ways that Duke can win this game outright, keep it close. Who the heck knows how it plays out? Someone's taking a last second three to try to tie it, bricks it. It's a 3-point win for either side, that sort of thing. So the four here is where we think there's value. Money line makes a little bit of sense too, if you want to sprinkle there, but we've tended to, the way we've programmed in the code is to say, if the model doesn't think you're 50% likely or more to win, we're going to be cautious. The points, if the model thinks you're 50% or more likely to win, we'll go ahead and take the money line. And that's what we have here in our final play, folks. We're doing it back-to-back days. The play of the day on the show, Creighton versus Tennessee. Creighton A grade, plus 135. It's our favorite. The WTF game, wrong team favorite, barely. But this is the exact situation we had with NC State and Tech, where we said this is a toss-up game and we're getting good plus odds. Now, we're not getting as good of plus odds here as we were there. But Creighton at plus 135 is way too good to pass up as an A grade. And I'm going to say the same thing I said about NC State, and that worked out for us. But again, responsible betting. We don't want more than 2 or 3% of our bankroll on any one given pick, because the point of this is not that Creighton is a lock. There are no such things as locks in betting, even though Rhys Davis may joke otherwise. That's not the case. The bottom line here is that these are two very good teams that are both flawed in different ways. We don't know what's going to happen. And a 50-50 proposition at plus 135 is a great investment. It's what we want to make today, tomorrow, the next day, every day that we're betting, and we will grow our bankroll in the long run. It doesn't mean it's going to work in one game, but you saw it work for us in NC State. We're going to take another chance here with Creighton at plus 135. Jake, what are you going to do Friday night? Your two favorite teams, Duke and Tennessee, are playing at the same time. I feel like you kind of ran up against it here, and you're going to have an interesting Friday night. Those of us on the Discord, we may need to check back in with you to see if you've survived, because I feel like it's going to be a hectic one for you.
Yeah, I won't, because there's a good chance that neither of my teams win. And like last year when Duke and Tennessee played each other, at least – one team was moving on, right?
Yeah, one. Yeah, what was going to lose? What was going to win? You know.
Yeah, but back to this pick. Look, it's hard. I'm having a hard time because my heart's getting in the way. Creighton, very good team. Love the plus odds here. If this was not named Tennessee, I'd be all over this. But they are a fantastic team, especially offensively. Alexander is an incredible, almost throwback to Rip Hamilton, where he just nails every mid-range jump shot and kind of seeks them out rather than the three-point shot. Baylor Shireman will cause all sorts of matchup issues no matter who he plays, because he is a very tall, lanky shooter, and he also rebounds well, plays well to the back of his, with his back to the bucket. And Kalkbrenner is just an incredible, because he can shoot the three ball, rebounds, one of the best weak side shot blockers I've seen in a long time for a guy who just doesn't look – he very looks like much like Jokic, where he's not – doesn't look like he's ever trying too hard, but does a lot of really fantastic things. It's really going to come down, I think, to turnovers. And if Tennessee can force them and if Creighton cannot – I mean, I know that sounds very simple, but – if Tennessee is
next able thing you to know, force you'll be them, telling us if one team scores more than the other, they'll win.
Yeah, but I mean, let's go back to this Texas game. Tennessee's offense was non-existent, absolutely non-existent. 3 of 25 beyond the arc. They still win the game because they were able to keep Texas from scoring by forcing turnovers, making Texas make just dumb plays on inbounds passes, just throwing the ball out of bounds, all this kind of stuff with the way they pressured defense. If Tennessee does that and Creighton isn't holding onto the ball, Creighton doesn't stand a chance, because if you can't get the ball into Kalkbrenner or to Baylor Shireman, they're not going to be able to score it. But if they're holding onto the ball, I think Tennessee's going to get Rick Barnes again, and the offense is just going to disappear. The defense will be there. They'll win this game. Creighton will win this game 45-40 or something like that. And it'll just be incredibly frustrating. But the offense, there's too many options for Creighton. They're too good. They do too many things too well. McDermott has been knocking on this door to get to the Final Four for a very long time. This might be his best chance.
And a ton of really good teams.
Yeah, and I think they're going to do it. I think Tennessee's offense is just going to disappear for one or two stretches for a little bit too long, and Creighton's going to be able to take advantage of it because Creighton is a great free throw shooting team, almost 80%. They shoot well from deep. They shoot well from everywhere. They've got one of the highest assist to field goal made ratios. They also do a good job of guarding the 3-point arc, and so that really prevents comeback, like late game comebacks and things like that. I just think with the plus odds, it's too hard to not take Creighton.
Absolutely. And the way I see this, I kind of think of this as like a 2x2 type situation, that there's two things that can happen really with Tennessee that are the difference, and two things that can happen with Creighton that are the difference. And both of them really have to do with how well they're hitting offensively, because both of these teams, and again, right now we're just in the like the obvious portion of the show. And I don't mean that to say the obvious, like, oh, if you score points, right, I get that. It's that both of these teams specifically we've seen have had real struggles with offensive consistency. They've both been very high variance teams where they sometimes have nights where things go well for them offensively and they sometimes don't. And every team has that, but these two teams have it like almost to the max. I mean, these are two of the higher variance teams in the tournament. Clemson, you know, is definitely another one. There's probably someone else that I'm thinking of that I'm forgetting as well. But these two teams are up there. So if Tennessee's hitting and Creighton's not, Tennessee's going to run away with this game. That's the only real way I think this gets out of hand. If any of the other three combinations, we've got a chance. And that's where the plus odds become valuable. So that's why we love the plus odds. But to your point about the turnovers, again, my father's a Texas alum, so watching the game with him, he was able to predict that Texas would turn the ball over like that because that's what they do. They sometimes struggle with that. A couple of players specifically he was talking about, and I don't want to, you know, disparage anybody or whatnot, because these guys are all much better athletes than we are. But I mean, he was able to point out some things and kind of predict them. And it was just kind of like, yeah, like we knew this was going to happen. And I think Creighton's a better team, and I don't think that they're going to fall in that trap. I don't think they're going to make some of the same mistakes that Texas did. I will say that the way that Creighton, I think, runs away with this game, I noticed in that Texas-Tennessee game, Texas got almost all their points on fast break, transition, even after a made basket where they pushed it, because Tennessee's defense is good when it gets set up, but when it wasn't set up, it was terrible. And Texas just got to the rim with ease and missed a bunch of layups even, but made a bunch as well. Greg McDermott's a great coach, and Creighton's not necessarily a team that wants to push tempo, but if he can find a way to try to get some of that, that's going to be a huge advantage for Creighton. Even if they can't, I still think we got a great shot to win this, but that would put them over the top, and he's a great coach, so if there's any way he could figure out how to do it, I think he will. And you contrast that with Rick Barnes on the other side, and again, not to disparage anybody, but, you know, there is a difference at this point that can sometimes be the difference in these games, is the coaches and how good they are. And that's not to say that Rick Barnes is a bad coach. It is to say that he has his flaws. He's been around long enough. He usually has very good teams, but we tend to know how it ends and why it ends. And that doesn't mean it ends here with him. It just means that that could be the deciding factor, is that he might get out coached. You know, the team in the bright orange might get out coached by the team in the bright blue. You know, it's just the way it might go.
I mean, his Final Four run had KD wasn't on that team.
No, that was TJ Ford, who was incredible college player.
Yes, and I mean, not that Dalton Connect is not that guy. I think TJ Ford did some things on the court for Rick Barnes that Rick Barnes wasn't able to pull the trigger on, and he is built for like a Premier League. Rick Barnes is built for like the Premier League kind of thing, where he will win the table for you and all that, because you play everybody, you play this long season, and he that defense grinds on you and it wins, and it takes advantage of that. That is not how you win a tournament.
Yeah.
Like that is, you have to absolutely make adjustments quick and on the fly. And that just doesn't seem to be his strong suit.
Yeah, and if you look back, it's well documented. The expected number of wins based off the seed that his teams at Texas and Tennessee should have had is much higher than the ones they did, including obviously the year that they had Kevin Durant and lost, couldn't make it out of the first, I think the first round even. For sure it was the first weekend that they yeah. couldn't make it out of. But I think they were one and done in that one. And, TJ Ford obviously was an incredible player that year. I actually was at the regional finals that year in San Antonio. When they won that and got to the Final Four. But I think the other thing is that college basketball has changed a lot since then, that the number of really good competitive teams has gotten better. And part of that is the exposure for some of these programs. Part of it is the NIL and whatnot helping spread some of the talent out. There's a lot of different reasons for it. But this was a trend that was already happening here in the last several years where we were starting to get more better teams, more depth in college basketball. I think it's a trend that's continuing. And that makes it even harder because that wasn't in his way back when he made that Final Four run, which would have been back in, I believe, 2004. I mean, it was almost 20 years ago. So it's quite a ways ago. So it should be a great ball game. A lot of ways to go high variance game, high variance teams, but that plus 135 is where the value is at in this one. Jake, that's all we've got here. Again, remember, join us on Dub Club for Discord access, more picks. We'll be doing first five picks exclusively available for our people over on Dub Club. Information, details, convenience, all sorts of benefits, and a 10-day trial to start you out with the QR code there or the link in the show description. Jake, we will try to get together for an Elite Eight show. Just because that's obviously four more games that we could talk about if the schedule dictates. If not, we'll have those picks over on Dub Club. But heading into baseball season, parting words before before the next show that people see is baseball.
May we all have a friend like Otani's interpreter who's willing to fall on that sword. Well, I mean, not. I don't know. There's a lot of things that happened there, but it really looks like my man has taken it to the team.
Yeah, there's a lot we don't know, obviously, in that situation. But one of the situations on the table here, one of the many, a lot of them involve possibly him being a really good friend. And you need people like that in your life, one way or the other. So what a wild scenario that is to start off. We're two games into the season, and we've already got one of the potentially biggest scandals in the sport's history since going back to Pete Rose, you know?
If we're going to follow the conspiracy theories,
oh my.
Does this mean Shohei has to play basketball for a year or two?
Yeah, right. That's always been the joke that he would have to, go play a different sport for a couple of years. here's the funny thing about that is, when that happened with Jordan and that conspiracy theory, right, that he was suspended for gambling, that's why he went and played baseball. And Jordan was so good at basketball that it was like, it's not a challenge to him anymore. He's just that dominant. Let's go see if he can do something else. And honestly, that's kind of what you'd say about Ohtani, like we've never seen a guy who's like, sure, I'll go out there and pitch and I can throw seven shutout innings and sure, I can go hit home runs. Like, so it would be very similar for him to be like, you know what? Yeah. Like, let me go try something. Like if he went out and played like soccer, like he probably could be like the fifth best player or something on their national team. And I'd be like, yeah, sure. Why not? Why not? That guy's incredible. So obviously I hope we don't do that. I hope we continue to see him play baseball, but yes, what a story. We will be discussing all the games, no matter who's playing or not playing, based off of whatever the heck comes from that coming forward. So a lot to look forward to baseball. Otherwise, thanks for watching. We'll see you later.